Brittany alluded to earlier about this phenomenology of prana, kind of the wind of mind. And one of the things that keeps us awake, in fact, when we are awake, the prana is actually on the accrete of the head center. When we fall into deep dreamless sleep, they accrete in the heart center. And when we dream, they accrete in the throat center. So it's very interesting, this sense of kind of the necessity of embodiment in order to go to sleep. And I find it very interesting, symbolically, that our neckties are a wonderful kind of metaphor of how we can choke off prana and kind of square it up at the top of our heads. So literally, when we go to sleep, we should untie our physical and psychological neckties to allow this wind energy and mind in the center of the heart center, which is actually where we go. So my charter for the next few minutes is to present a kind of an alternative approach to sleep, to try to show you how it is that there are disciplines that allow us to relate to sleep in a psychological, spiritual, and even phenomenological way. And thanatology is the kind of the science of death and dying. And it's a very interesting correlation with sleep, which is intimated even in Greek mythology, because the Greek god for death is Thanatos, the Greek god for dream is Morpheus, and these are actually the brothers. In fact, some references say that they're actually twins. So there's a deep correlation between dreaming and death. And I think even more provocatively, the father, the parent of both dream and death is Hypnos, who is the god of sleep. And in the spiritual traditions, sleep is kind of a code word for ignorance. So it's actually ignorance that gives birth to both dream and death. And the practices that I'm going to just bear the finger paint for you are ways to transform sleep, dream, and death onto a spiritual path if you're so inclined. So I want to start by giving you a sense of a progression. There are going to be four principal practices. I'm wondering, day is day back there somewhere?
Yeah.
Did you happen to get that? Oh, there it is. I'll come back to this a little bit later. This will be the summary slide, which is going to be working with a sometimes referred to as a theory of recapitulation or the universal process. And what is suggested here is that certain processes in nature, certain phenomenologies, this is highly intuitive, actually replicate, they actually reproduce on different levels. And what I will be pointing through over the next 15 minutes or so is how it is that we can use this process of sleeping, if you're so inclined, to actually prepare for death, because the process is fundamentally the same. And when I get a chance to come back and unpack a little bit of this and show you how, so you can start to explore this mindscape where you're not going to go to sleep and see if it speaks to you. So these four practices, the first one is principally a psychological one. It's the most accessible one. And this is, of course, the practice and entertainment of lucid dreaming. And lucid dreaming is this wonderful experience where you realize in the midst of a full-blown dream, you're in the middle of a dream, and through either serendipity or certain practices that are designed to elicit this, you quite literally awaken within the dream, but you're still dreaming. So this is this has been scientifically proven. Stephen LaBerge and others at the Stanford lab have proven this using very sophisticated studies on neurobiology. And what can take place within lucid dreaming charter is, first of all, it's just a whole lot of fun. Here's, has anybody here had lucid dreams? Yeah, in Boulder it's not uncommon. It has a very intimate connection, by the way, with meditation. Because people who engage in mindfulness meditation, which is a generic, universal type of mind training, actually cultivate a kind of mental muscle that doesn't disintegrate during sleep. And this mental muscle can be refined to such a point, as we'll see when I talk about sleep yoga, that an individual can hold on very, very subtly to a level of awareness that doesn't disintegrate even deep dreamless sleep. You maintain a type of 24/7 kind of awareness, which is, in fact, what great yogi masters do. The Buddha, for instance, the etymology of the word Buddha comes from a Sanskrit root. It means to awaken or to know. And it's not just a metaphor. Buddhas, not just the historical Buddha, but anybody who wakes up to reality, fundamentally never falls asleep. And that particular process is also recapitulated in distraction, because distraction and sleep associated with ignorance are also two sides of the same coin. So As a person develops proficiency in mindfulness, staying awake and lucid to the present moment, you no longer become distracted during the day, so you no longer become distracted during the night. You're literally awake 24/7. So this is something that a person can actually cultivate. So with lucid dreaming, what takes place is you wake up within the dream, and for the first couple of years when I started doing this 30 years ago, it's basically just a gas. I mean, think about what you could do if you could do anything you wanted and nobody ever saw you. It's also very interesting kind of psychological revelation. This is why both in spiritual and psychological traditions, dreams are referred to as the truth tellers. So it's very revealing what you do when you first wake up to a lucid dream. And for the most part, just use your imagination. You know, what would you do if you were invisible? Eventually, the entertainment value tends to subside, and at that point, lucid dreaming can be used for psychological purposes, and there are many, many applications of this. One very immediate one is establishing a very healthy relationship with things like nightmares. You know, one way to describe the phenomenology of the nightmare is it's actually a rejected part of human experience. It's a part of your psyche that you have thrown away and rejected it. But as we all know from even classic psychology, you're basically throwing a boomerang because that rejected part of you will be called, it will come back, calling out to be healed and to be whole. And until it is, it will continue to recur. So if you have recurrent nightmares, it means you're a bad listener. It means you're not aware of this rejected aspect of your body-mind matrix that is calling for reintegration. So with lucid dreaming, what you can do is instead of the habitual response in a non-lucid dream, which is to run away from that dream, that nightmarish trigger, is you do the opposite of what you would do. And you actually establish a pain self. Sane, healthy, awake relationship to the nightmare. And I've done this myself, and it's a marvelous way to heal the kind of disembodied, disintegrated aspect of yourself within the medium of this very powerful, intimate laboratory of the mind. Lucid dreamers and practitioners of dream yoga, they're called onironauts. These are explorers of inner space, the space of mind. Somewhat akin to astronauts, which explore outer space, onironauts explore the inner mindscape of deep infinite mental space. So as that particular practice develops, it can mature into what's called dream yoga. And this is yoga in the deepest sense of the word, which means basically to unite or to yoke. It's not just what we do physically. There's a whole battery of mental yogas, and dream yoga is one of them. So what you do with dream yoga is you're given all these methodologies, you have a platform of lucidity at your disposal, and then you go about using the dream state for purposes of spiritual awakening, which is a wonderful kind of thesis altogether in the Advaita Nandu tradition of Hinduism and also Vajrayana Buddhism, they have a very interesting assertion, and that is that we have everything completely backwards. That we're actually the most awake and deeper in sleep, and we're actually the most asleep in what we call waking reality. And Sri Ramana Maharshi, the massive Indian sage, once said something that I will send home to you as a koan. That which does not exist in deep, dreamless sleep is not real. So maybe that's the kind of essential question behind sleep yoga, which I'll get to. So in dream yoga, you wake up within the dream, and then you actually start to exercise your mind. You start to work. At this point, you can have lucid dreams that will last 45 minutes or even an hour. That gives you a lot of time to explore this particular laboratory of mind. And when that arises, you can shape-shift things. You can create things mentally. You can start to work with creating fearful situations volitionally, and then actually step into these self-generated fearful situations and therefore establish a relationship to fear itself, which is the primordial emotion of this confused so-called waking reality. If you can transform fear, you can transform anything. On more esoteric levels, really advanced dream yogic practitioners can emanate an allusion to prana. They can create what's called a special dream body, which is generated out of prana mind. And this can save you a lot of stomach aches and a lot of time and travel expense, because with this body, you can literally FedEx your consciousness to different places on this earth or different dimensions altogether. This is somewhat associated with the OBEs, the out-of-body experiences and astral projection. But I hesitate to bring those in because they almost automatically imply kind of there are obviously many more things to say about dream yoga, but let me progress to these latter two. The next stage from that is one develops increased awareness, and this awareness is always set by what we do during the day. Interestingly enough, as you become more lucid during the day, more awake during the day, that lucidity naturally starts to bleed through. You just naturally have more lucid dreams, and then those can be actually practiced, and that muscle can be exercised. But eventually, you can start to bleed that through the deep delta, or deep dreamless sleep. The non-REM states that occur for the first 9 minutes generally when we fall asleep. And this is a very profound experience. It can be also catalyzed when you're in a lucid dream situation. Those of you who have these experiences, if you just close lucid dream eyes, you will actually back your way up into this deep dream state. And this experience is an extraordinarily blissful, non-dual experience. It is difficult to describe. It's like floating in deep space. There's no sense of self or other. There's no sense of, big rests in this vast open nothingness, which is actually emptiness, fullness, and luminosity.
Andrew, I think you have to integrate that nightmare into
your future. Yes, exactly. So this is actually what we would call a dream sign. It's one way to actually work with lucidity. So this is a more sophisticated, more evolved state of consciousness, in a 24/7 fully maturated form. This is really what constitutes the mind of the Buddha, which, by the way, is not patented. Anybody who wakes up can experience this state. And then eventually that can be led as a platform into exploring the after-death states according to some belief systems, for instance, Tibetan Buddhism, some different aspects of Hinduism. And in the very briefest few minutes, I'm going to just share a little bit about this using a slide. I don't know how much time I have left, but so this is a graph that summarizes this particular recapitulation is through the process of death, dying, and rebirth. But it applies every night when you go to sleep. The same phenomenology actually takes place. So the left side is the most interesting aspect. This refers to what are called the 8 levels of consciousness according to Yogacara Buddhism. The first 5 are very easy: sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. This is what dissolves when we go to sleep. 6 consciousness is what we experience every night when we're actually lying in bed, when everything's shut down and your mind is spinning. That's the level of the 6 consciousness. Where it gets really interesting is when the 6 consciousness starts to dip into 7. Because consciousness of 7 and 8 are constant but subconscious. They're always running behind the scenes. Consciousnesses 1 through 6 are conscious but inconstant. So when you're going to sleep, you're actually dipping in and out of the 6 and 7 consciousness. And as one becomes aware of this doctrinally, you feel that way. And then even more provocatively, experientially, through these practices, this is where you can start to retain awareness as you're going through, because you actually understand what's taking place. When you drop into the 8 consciousness, what's called the substrate consciousness, this is the repository of dream states, and also the repository of lies, if you believe that. Sometimes talked about as a stem cell consciousness. It's actually pre-human. The deepest level of your conscious awareness is actually pre-human. You do not appropriate that. And then if you can drop with full conscious awareness into the point, sometimes called the 9th consciousness, but that's a slight misnomer because it's not consciousness, it's wisdom. This is pre-spatial, pre-temporal. So this is where the mind goes, for instance, when you drop into deja vu experiences. You drop into a dimension of reality that is pre-temporal, pre-spatial, and you can actually be like a gopher and go into the past and future and retrieve experiences and bring them back up. And a yogic practitioner can actually do this volitionally. Now the bottom thing, what happens is a quick mirror image of this. In the dream state, what arises is a mental body. In the after-death state, what arises is a concordant expression of that mental body. And then from there, when that body is fully harnessed, you can actually, like I alluded to earlier, you can kind of start to direct that into all sorts of very beneficial trajectories, which many masters in the spiritual traditions have done. So I think I'm probably... So this is the briefest kind of race through 4 kind of alternative approaches to what happens in that when you go to sleep. There's obviously a great deal to say about that. Because there's something to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There you have it. Thanks.